everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about a very special episode of television today. Oh my goodness. This one I have been informed by Liz that you and Slow Beef have been like, when you talk about stuff and like about stuff about later episodes without spoiling it for me, because I'm the guy who hasn't seen it yet. This is an episode that frequently gets brought up of just like, oh, don't worry, that it's no pink cupcakes. Is this the case?
I think that it's literally been that way since our first season of the show. Is every so often, like, Slow Beef and I will be like, well, at least it wasn't pink cupcakes.
There's like very few episode titles outside of when we're about to record it that I like know, you know, like immediately. And the Anne Frank one is an obvious one for obvious reasons, but Pink Cupcakes is like another one that I'm just like, oh yeah, Pink Cupcakes. Yep.
Oh yeah. Ooh, I'm gonna remember this episode for a grip. I'm gonna remember this attempt at telling a story. Holy shit, am I gonna remember this? I was streaming a video game today and just mentioned that I was really upset about an episode of American Horror Story, and someone in chat just responded with, "Was it the pink cupcake one?" And I went, "Yeah, yeah, it was."
That's awesome.
So it's got a reputation, it would seem. And let's get into it. Guess what, everybody? We're starting with a delusion immediately. The first thing we're showing you is fucking made up. So get ready for that for the next, this whole episode. Liz, would you like to take us away to the museum where we're not?
Yeah. Just like, without spoiling what happens, I'm not going to spoil what happens, but I want to be clear, there will be several different categories of things that are going on in this episode, and they are real life, flashbacks, delusions / fantasies, and then flashbacks inside of delusions.
Yeah, and then there's the layers. Yeah, like, yeah. You really have to carry about, like, the megatype at the top. And then after that, it's like, yeah, fantasy inside of a delusion. Whatever, didn't happen.
Yeah. this doesn't do a great job of, like, saying which one is which either. So, like, good luck keeping track of, like...
They very intentionally try to obfuscate it at some points. Like, they try to pull a funny little trick with it, which is just the worst.
Yeah.
Just the worst. It means why am I watching your show anymore? Well, we got to continue.
Yeah. No, 100% I want to add that. Yes, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, sometimes they'll toss... The extra thing is, not only do they try to obfuscate it, but, like, sometimes also for funsies, they'll slap a random filter over something that's happening, and it's like, okay, well, what is this filter to indicate? Because usually filters, like, indicate something, and they're like, no, we just wanted to keep you more disoriented, so you can't tell what's real and what isn't real. But yeah, this... All of this aside, it is so wild to start this episode with a weird fantasy that, like, doesn't have, like, a culmination. It's not like we end up, like, the scene, like, transitions to the person who it's about, like, being like, oh, what a daydream.
And they're not, yeah. Yeah. And just to be clear, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're not supposed to know it's a fantasy just yet, which, like... It makes it feel really, like, cheap, like, once you find out it's fancy, because it sets up the, whoa, how did we get here thing, and then it's like, just kidding, we didn't, you know, because...
Also, they don't fully sell it as a fantasy, right? Because if you want to do that, what you do is you kind of, like, clue the viewers in on it by having everything be, like, a little too sweet, a little too good, a little too clean in how it's wrapped up, so that the viewer then is like, oh, okay, this is bullshit, but, like, I get it, and it's pretty obvious, you know. But no, like, Stanley gets owned in this flashback. Like, he brought in a thing, and they're like, eh, it's not really that good. Like, why would that be his fantasy, brother?
Me self-owning myself in the fantasy, the daydream that I'm having about myself
going to the Miss Shadow lovely dimension and falling down a flight of stairs. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, in case it's not obvious, this is a daydream. It's really not even super clear what this is, because, like, it's, like, not real, but it's clearly Stanley's deal, but again, doesn't end.
Can I tell you what I think it is? I think it's a good set piece that they couldn't fit in the plot because it involves a character's death, but they don't want to kill the character, so they kind of do this cowardly sort of like, I want to show you this thing I made, which like, I'll spoil it in the scene, is like, Paul the Illustrated Seal in like a little like glass container full of liquid, like he's been like, you know, what's the word I'm looking
pickled.
For?
Pickled. Preserved.
Yeah, preserved. Thank you.
Yeah, pickle.
You know, yeah. Pickled, right.
A little column A, a little column B, and I'll call it as it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so basically it's like, yeah, he's, they're like honoring some guy, and it's like, yeah, he's on display, and it's like, oh, you know, like, well, oh my gosh, how did Paul, like, you the viewer, I think you're supposed to be like, oh man, this guy killed Paul, I guess this episode's gonna be how it's gonna be there, but it's like, nah, that didn't happen, we're just saying, wouldn't it be cool if, which is like weird for a television show you have complete control over, you know,
and like the one thing I think they're trying to foreshadow with this, and it really is, I think you nailed it with, they really like this set piece, they couldn't find a way to leverage it, so they try to use it as a justification in saying, when Stanley is explaining to the museum owner, she asks, like, oh, how did he die? And he's like, oh, you know, it was he choked to death or something, you know, like made up some excuse of like, oh, it was just an accident, you know, that kind of thing. And that's to kind of lead us into the idea of like, they have to set up these, you know, non-damaging kills like Hitman, which I don't why. Who cares?
Yeah. Which, in case we didn't, I don't remember whether we talked about what sets up this scene. So the way that it sets up is like they're back at the museum, and by them, I mean Stanley and Maggie. And it's clearly meant to be like after their time at the freak show. I guess then they were successful, quote unquote. And like the lady who runs the museum is like, and now we're gonna honor like the guy who has given more to our museum than anything else and has revitalized it and has made it profitable again, and like Stanley's all ready to get like honored by this lady. Yeah. And then she calls up some dude we've never fucking seen before named James Martone. He gets a first and a last name. And then Stanley is tilted about it. And Maggie's like, why would you think that she would honor you? And like at this point, it's not clear that this is supposed to be in the future. It seems like this might have been a flashback to like maybe a character building arc for Stanley's backstory, where like someone else got an award that he wanted, and like that was a motivation or something.
But it was Paul in the tank. So
it's Paul in the tank. Right. So it's very clear that this is supposed to be the future, and they were successful, which leads to the question, well, then why is that other guy getting honored for Stanley's contribution to the museum? I have some questions for the museum, actually, because he's not the one who donated Paul the Illustrated Seal. So I do actually have a few questions about why that other guy is getting the reward. But alas,
weird fantasy.
Yeah, weird fantasy where you get owned at your own like award ceremony after being successful in your weird big heist.
It's like remember that Simpsons bit where Lisa is imagining herself like the second best and she's on the band and they start booing and she's like, why would they come to our concert just to boo us? But that's a joke and they do it like here, like for real.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah, and then like we see that it's Paul the Illustrated Seal, and it like hard cuts to Stanley and Maggie at a hotel, and like that's supposed to be our indicator that like it wasn't real. And I'm like, well, was like Stanley maladaptive daydreaming while like in the back of the taxi or what? Like what was happening now? Yeah.
Is this like a heist movie where they show like them stealing the money but something goes wrong? Except they don't do that at all later in the episode, you know? Like
They start talking through the plan, and more or less the debate comes down to Stanley being like, well, I gotta get some fish tanks to put them in, you know, gotta figure that out, so I'll call some aquariums, get that sorted, and Maggie being like, I didn't agree to kill a guy, and him just be like, well, I mean, Sure you did.
Yeah.
Okay. So you bring that up.
He's correct.
You bring that up. That is the transition that made, because like I bet some of you were wondering, well, like, how do you know that it's like it wasn't real? It's because when that first scene ended, the literal transition into this scene is Maggie sitting with her arms folded going, well, that's a nice fantasy, but it would never play out that way. Which, like,
oh, so, God, right.
So does that mean that he explained this weird scenario in his head where he got fucking, like, cucked out of his own award, like, to Maggie? Did he, like, include that information when explaining it to Maggie?
Oh, God, you're right.
Hey, babe, I had a dream where I got fucking owned. You want to hear about it?
It's like, and I think you should leave sketch, like, in his own fantasy, yeah. And like, and then they wore some other guy in the thing? Well, it's supposed to be my show?
Oh, my God. And Maggie's like,
the
is
that
part of
it? The dog attacked me viciously.
Yeah. I know what a pig looks like. I forgot that was the transition into the scene. And Maggie's like, yeah, I didn't agree to kill anybody. And he's like, no, you did. And she's like, can't argue with that, I guess. And then fair. Something happens and he like knocks over his suitcase, which is full of gay porn.
Yeah. He just, it's so funny, too, because it's just like, Tight Nuts magazine.
Which still feels like a continuation of the I think you should leave bit.
Yeah. Like, he just stops, he's like, oh, now I got my gay porn all over the floor, and I got owned in my dream, and my accomplice thinks I'm dumb. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. And she's like, hey, you got to put that shit away, Stanley, because the only thing that Florida hates more than freaks at the freak show is gay people. And I'm like, that is weird and specific. And I'm not sure if it's true, given that some of the people in this show threw up when they saw a conjoined twin. however, I get that you're like trying to foreshadow something that happens at the end of the episode.
Also,
they're like, you got to know this.
Considering, as we find out later on, there is a thriving community in the city. Yeah, so they don't seem to hate him that much.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, literally, the only reason this scene happens, because I can say with great confidence that this scene where she's like, you can't let people know you're gay, does not have any effect on anything else that happens. Like, it literally is just so that we, at the end of this episode, which I doubt we'll get to today, know that, like, some people might want to hide their sexuality in Jupiter, Florida. That might be important to some people, which you could just have those characters tell me that. I would believe them. But instead, we get this weird foreshadowing where Stanley knocks his suitcase full of gay porn that he carries around, I guess, onto the floor.
Pick it up. You don't want them to see your Hot Nuts magazine. What are you doing? I knocked my damn suitcase off. Why do you keep it on top of your suitcase? I don't know. I'm just all screwed up. I had a bad dream, and now I'm dumping it. Is this the dream too? Fuck.
The way that Maggie also addresses this makes me feel like this is an ongoing problem. Like, she's just always trying to, like, just keep him in check because he's always accidentally showing people gay porn all the time. And
I couldn't stop showing them gay porn, and that's not allowed.
She's like, God, I gotta get a better partner. This shit sucks.
She's right, to be fair.
Yeah, she's very right. And then, so American Horror Story correctly predicts Ron DeSantis and Florida. And then that's the opening sequence. It's actually really short. That was one thing I noticed. Like, we've been talking about it for a while. But, like, mm-hmm. It was, like, one of the shortest opening sequences. And also, nothing happens because the thing that took up the most time wasn't
it's
real.
Fake.
Yeah.
We made it up.
Yeah. So now we get to, like, something real that's happened. Also, the timing of this episode is fucking insane. So the next scene, you don't know what time of day the opening sequence part happened. It's in half of it's not real, and the other half's in an enclosed hotel room.
Yeah.
So who the fuck
even
knows?
Matter.
Yeah, it could be 3 a.m. Who fucking knows?
This is the wildest episode. You will miss nothing if you don't understand anything from it. You know?
Yeah. So now it's the morning. It's very explicitly the morning at Mott Mansion, because both Gloria and Dandy are waking up and leaving their bedrooms like first thing in the morning. So I assume this is day after Halloween, morning of. Don't worry. Precisely 0.1% of this episode takes place in this time frame, and it's this scene. Gloria comes downstairs and she's like, "Dora, nobody's making me any coffee. Where are you?" And then she finds Dora's dead body, which means Dandy didn't even fucking try to hide it. And Dandy hears his mom screaming and comes downstairs like, "Holy shit, are you okay, mother?" And then he sees Dora on the ground and he like tries to play it off at first. He's like, "Oh,
it's
shit,
so funny.
Someone broke in and murdered Dora." Yeah.
Oh my God, did someone kill Dora? That's terrible.
Yeah. Yes. And what's funny is like he doesn't
Mother, no, I'll fetch a rug.
Yeah, he doesn't even do it he doesn't even do it in like a way where like he's like not trying to get away with it. He's like, "Oh no, someone murdered Dora." Like he's gonna try and play it off, and then Gloria doesn't even like entertain it. She's like, "I know you fucking killed Dora." And I'm like, okay, well, that's not how I expected that interaction to go, honestly.
It is funny that he did try to Homer Simpson it for like a single second. He's just like, "Oh my gosh, what's the, oh no, someone dropped a nuclear fuel rod in the city. Who could that have been?"
Hello, like, my name is we Mr. know. Burns. I killed Dora.
Yeah. So she's like, "Go to your room, Dandy." And she's like very distraught. And that's where we set that off. That was precisely 3 seconds of television. Now it's nighttime at the circus. So I guess a whole day elapses that we just don't give a fuck about. Because now it's nighttime at the circus. 15 hours later, I guess. Stanley comes into Elsa's like tent. And she's like, "Here's a drink for you." And... she kind of like starts to ask, because remember, she thinks he's like an agent or something from like somewhere. She thinks he's like the person who's going to make her famous, according to what Maggie said in her fortune telling. Which, going back to that, I'd like to take a brief aside about the fortune telling to do some housekeeping about a few things that have happened in previous episodes.
Do you have to bring up this? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I have several things. The first and stupider thing that I would like to bring up is that we complained about Maggie picking Esmeralda as her fake name. Because A, it's like the most obvious fake name for a fortune teller that's ever been, and she's a little white lady, so like it's also like extra weird and stupid. The bad news that I have for everybody who's listening and also us here at the podcast is that upon further research, I found that that is in fact Maggie's name. Maggie's name is Maggie Esmeralda.
No, I don't care. This is like when Kojima's like, she breathes through her skin. That's why she has to be naked. Like, fuck off.
But
like,
at least...
don't care. You chose her last name when you wrote the script, you motherfucker. I know you did. You picked it for a little white girl.
Yep.
So that's the first terrible news that I have to share. The other one is something has been bothering me for several episodes of our show and theirs. Which is that several times now, I'd say roughly like 3 to 5 times randomly over all of the episodes, Elsa has mentioned someone named Marlena, who she has spoken about though it is their like her like deepest, darkest nemesis who she hates. And like even to the point where Esmeralda, Maggie Esmeralda, sees a picture of a woman in a book in Elsa's room, and she's like, "I'm seeing a woman named Marlena." And Elsa's like, "Holy shit, this girl knows what she's talking about." And then Elsa brings Marlena up also in full hater fashion to Edward Mordrake, the exposition ghost, and then never explains what she's talking about. And he never brings it up either. So I'm like, "Hey, could we maybe revisit this and explain who the fuck this woman you keep talking about is?"
No.
So I did some digging, and so two things. One, the woman they're talking about is a real person, a real lady. I guess that's pronounced Marlena, because everyone's saying it Marlena, but it looks like Marlene. I'm actually not familiar with the actress they're referring to. but Marlena Dietrich, I think is how it's said.
Dietrich, yeah.
Which is a woman who looks an awful lot like Elsa Mars.
A real human being.
Yeah. She's a real lady who looks an awful fucking lot like Elsa Mars. And apparently the deal is that Elsa, like, low-key has, like, insane beef with this lady who looks like her and has, like, a similar backstory. I'm doing extremely air quotes.
Yeah. Okay, I would like to cut off that similar backstory. She was a... just like helped a lot during World War II, from what I understand, and like was a performer for the Allied front and whatnot. Just like really good on the up and up. Didn't make men sit on rusty nails, as far as I know.
Yeah, like, the extent of like
was
how
just
far...
like a good lady who liked to perform. Like she was pretty hot, and that was cool.
And like was like, in Germany. Was in Germany is about where like it. It like starts to separate. Looked the same as Elsa Mars and was in Germany. That's about where it starts to deviate in as far as like backstories go. But yeah, so anytime she has spoken about Marlena, air quotes, she's talking about a real actress that the show expects us to A, know about, and B, immediately clock like, yeah, who else the fuck would she be talking about? She's obviously talking about Marlena Dietrich, the character or the real life woman who looks a lot like her and also was successful in show business around the same time. Like, yeah, obviously.
Of course, right.
You fucking idiots. Media literacy is at an all time low. so. Sorry, I just wanted to get that out there because it's been bothering me for several episodes.
This show talks about like actors and actresses from like the 40s to 60s in ways that really do feel like someone talking about jazz musicians from like a part of the world you've never heard of, where they're just like, you've never heard about Big Hat Bigsby? And I'm just like, no, I have never heard of Big Hat Bigsby. They're like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, I don't know who this random lady is. Like, oh, she was in movies before they had sound. Cool. See if I give a shit.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you don't know about Big Hat Bigsby. Well, our main character is based off of Big Hat Bigsby, and half of their backstory is based off of Big Hat Bigsby's life.
You might be too stupid to watch American
but also,
Horror Story.
They hate Big Hat Bigsby explicitly. They mention how much they hate Big Hat Bigsby, despite being based on Big Hat Bigsby, which they don't realize. Like, what are we doing here?
That's it. That's the episode's title is Big Hat Bigsby, by the way. Of the American Horror Story. Oh my god. So anyway, back to what we're doing in the show, which is Elsa trying to schmooze up Stanley, who is like Stanley tries to explain to Maggie in the previous scene, he's like, I gotta keep Elsa on the hook, and I'm like, you're kinda doing that. Like, why are you reiterating to her? Like, you're doing it. Good job. Way to remind her, like, what you're doing actively. Well, us, I guess.
Don't worry. He's going to, in a confusing way, fuck it up tremendously and then have to justify a bunch of wild actions to fix said fuck up, which is, he walks in and, you know, is just kind of like, I'm here from the land of dreams, Hollywood. You might have heard of it. And Elsa responds with, oh, like MGM or like, you know, what movie company? And he goes, no, the Worldwide Broadcasting Network, WBN. You're going to be on television. And she goes, I hate television. Which is an insane response.
It really is.
But she fucking hates television so much. Like, it's, I don't watch a lot of TV, but this is like visceral hatred. Like, she calls it the death of art and civilization.
Which is, yeah, insane.
Which is, like, I don't know, that's something that, like, maybe, like, a really, like, uptight, like, suburban housewife might, feel as, like, I don't know, a kind of conservative feeling about...
She was in a snuff film.
Yeah, yeah.
Not
exactly the opinion you would expect a woman whose legs were sawed off by a chainsaw in a snuff movie to have. You'd think that maybe,
or like, provided enough opium that they were able to like entrap a nurse for multiple months and then send her on her way with enough blackmail that she couldn't do shit on film, I might add.
Yeah, not really two characteristics that you would put together for this character. Yeah, she says she'd rather be boiled in oil than be on television. But she does, like, what's wild is also, not only is it weird that Elsa would do that at all, but it's also weird that, like, this is still Maggie's quote-unquote prediction coming true. So, like, does she just, like, keep vibing with it? Because she's like, maybe he's lying. Maybe he actually works for movies. Like, why doesn't she just, like, kick him out at this point? She doesn't. She's like, all right, well, we're still going to go along with this, even though I've made it very clear I'm not interested in what you're offering me. I still view this as my way to stardom, even though I refuse to be on TV. Now it's time for Jimmy to be awkward by the carousel. Jim, and boy, howdy is he going to be. The next, like, 15...
It's me, Jimmy, Crab Man. I was born of the ocean, son of Poseidon, god of the sea. Watch me juggle these balls. Like...
And he, oh, boy, does he. Boy, does he juggle those balls. And then he, like, fucks it up. And, like, Ty and I were kind of briefly talking about this before we started recording. It's only, like, I don't know. Like, I would say it's, like, only, like, moderately more impressive that a guy with lobster hands can juggle than a regular guy. Like,
juggling is not, like, an individual finger activity, particularly. It's, like, if someone was juggling with mittens on, I'd be like, oh, it must be cold out and they have to juggle. I wouldn't really clock that they were, like, trying to up the dexterousness. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, they're trying to be more impressive with those mittens.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa. Holy shit. Is that juggler wearing mittens?
I don't know anything about juggling, but that seems way harder. Holy shit.
Me trying to convince my son that this very boring Ren Faire is actually quite based.
Yeah, that's his bit. He's like, I'm the son of Poseidon and I'm lobster boy and I'm juggling with my lobster hands, and he fucks it up. He beefs it like insanely, and Maggie comes up and he's like, yeah, I still get stage fright because now there's like people watching or whatever and I gotta practice now. I'm like, fucking whatever, Jimmy, no one cares. And Maggie's like, why don't you let me read your future? And he's like, no thanks. And she's like, you might as well. And he's like, you got me there. And she uses this. This is actually kind of clever. It goes like nowhere, but it's kind of clever. Mm-hmm. Maggie, who is still pretending to be psychic, uses this opportunity to like low-key warn Jimmy to get the fuck out of there before Stanley.
Low key. Yeah. She basically grabs him by the hand and is like, you need to go. You need to leave. There's a bad man here who's going to get you. You need to run away. Mm. And then when he's like, no, I don't think I'm going to do that, she just goes, why not? Why not just leave? You could have a normal life. And then he's like, oh, okay, you're like weirdly in love with me. Okay, I'm into it. Girl hot. And goes for a kiss. And she's like, no, not like that. And he's like, well, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And like completely whiffs the part. He gets, hey, I don't blame him. I'd get lost in girl hot with Emma Roberts too. But like, yeah, he's got to keep it together, cowboy. And just loses the part where she's like, there's a bad man coming to kill you and your family. And just drops that ball fucking entirely.
Yeah, she straight up is like, yeah, there's a man here who's gonna try and fucking kill you. You should leave. And he's like, okay. What about a kiss, though?
I think I see what you're about a kiss, princess. Yeah.
And she's like, fucking what? No. Like, what are you talking about? And then they're both weird about it. And Jimmy's about to make it 500 times. If you thought that was weird and uncomfortable, it's going to get so much fucking worse.
That, because like that scene, at least to me, I was like, okay, yeah, they've been trying to build up a will they, won't they thing with these characters where like they were abandoned on the side of the road and they had to do the call. And then like she saw him save everything. Like they've been trying to build that up. So there's any like reason for that scene to have happened. There's any build up. What's about to happen in the next scene is crazy. It's just like full fucking crazy. It comes out of nowhere. It has no precedent. It's about to set off a wild chain of events.
If it can even be called that, truly. It's showtime, and Jimmy's like, well, I'm going to go do the circus now since I fucked it up trying to kiss Maggie or whatever. And he goes backstage, and we get a long shot of like everybody in the circus, like all worked up, getting ready for their big show. Because remember, the whole town is there. Because I'd like to reiterate, the whole town is there because they are grateful that Jimmy saved the town from a serial killer. So they're already kind of like in the frame of mind of like, you know, I might not have gone to this show otherwise, but we're here supporting the people who saved our small community. Just keep that in mind for something that happens later. That's very strange. Their reaction is very strange to something that happens. And Ethel is like trying to get everybody to like get ready and everything.
Jesus Christ.
And she's looking for Del. And we have got to make Kathy Bates do more than one take. We have got to make her do multiple takes.
I'm glad this one also pissed you off, because her read of hard at all, summon a beach is, I believe, what she calls Del. Not
beach.
A son of a bitch, a summon a beach. It's outrageous. There's no accent that makes you do that other than like typing on DeviantArt. Like, that's not.
Yeah. It's fully like she just like clearly said it wrong. And, like, you can almost see a split-second frame where, like, Kathy Bates realizes she whiffed it. And then, like, she just decides, well, they didn't call cut, so I'm just going to keep going. And, like, they didn't bother doing another take. Because she says, summon a beach. And then, like, there's a little pause. And then she keeps going and says something about him being drunk in his trailer. And she sends Jimmy to go look for him. And, like, you can see, like, the, like, doubt on Kathy Bates' face when she lands that line. And then they just keep going. And they don't ever do another take. That's what makes it into the show. And then it cuts to Jimmy banging on Del's trailer door. And he's, like, fucking wailing on it. It's like, relax, Jimmy. Jesus fucking Christ. He's wailing on the door to Del's trailer. And Desiree answers the door drunk. Which it's not really clear, like, what her deal is, like, why she's upset.
I also need to clarify, the reason they're trying to find Del is because they need their carnival barker on the big night, but, like, Jimmy has been doing the carnival barking before, and also now is the hero of the people who they came to see. Who needs Del? Who gives a fuck? Why are we looking for Del? Fuck Del, bro. But they need this next thing to happen. So yeah, Desiree opens the door super drunk for some reason.
She drinks now.
Yeah, not something this character does, by the way. We've seen her maybe have like a drink. But now she's just like wasted, just like fully wasted. And like she's acting like she's like sad about it. Which like it seems like there's context we don't know about. like Desiree and Del have their own shit going on. It's like, all right, well, time and place. You're part of this new freak show now, and they're having like a big night. So maybe suck it up and just deal with it or whatever.
Oh, Liz, this is easy. So we had the scene about Del not being able to give Desiree sex no more because he no able to give her sex. So that means she now crazy.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That'll do it. Yeah.
I regret to inform you, that is what the writers had. I am pretty sure that's what they were going for here, which is just like...
Yeah. She's driven with the opposite of sex. She's sex crazed now from lack of it. Hate to see it.
Yeah, she's like, Del's gone, and I'm not performing tonight, and I'm sad, and I'm drunk. And then Jimmy's like, ma'am, this is a Wendy's, and sits next to her, like, to really weirdly comfort her, because he doesn't really know what else to do. That's fair, honestly. I wouldn't, in his situation, I wouldn't either.
Maybe he's, like, kind of sex-crazed, too, from not getting that kiss. So
I think that is the implication, yes. I think that is part of what they imply, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, again, I guess it's nice that both genders can do it. Yeah. I guess that's cool. They didn't feel the need to be like, this is only ladies go crazy this way. They're like, nah, just everybody fuck it. Who cares?
Yeah. Jimmy like sits down next to her and she gives like this weird, sad speech. I'll be real. I don't even remember what the fuck she says, but it goes on for like a while about how like I used to feel something and me and Del were on top of the world and like we had such a good thing going on. I'm like, well, the fucking circus you're at right now is sold out. Get out there. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then Jimmy sits next to her and I let out a honk when this line got delivered. Like, if I had beverage in my mouth, I would have done a spit take because Jimmy starts fucking crying. And Desiree looks at him like, oh no, what's wrong, little buddy? And he goes, yeah. You want to know who was brave? Meep.
And I will not lie. I paused the video and audibly went, come on. Like, I'm just so sick of them talking about Meep.
I remembered that. Like, you know what I mean? It was one of those things where I just had to do that eye roll because I just remembered, like, they don't shut the fuck up about Meep ever. And it's, like, constant Meep all the time. And he's such a nothing character. It's like, stop trying to make Meep work. He doesn't.
That's the thing is, like, if this was a smarter or better show, it's so desperately reads like a bit. Like, this is a bit. Like, no matter what happens, no matter how the plot progresses, Jimmy somehow finds a way to bring it back up to Meep. Somehow.
What if like instead of Meep dying, there was another character or characters that Jimmy had interacted with who he had kind of like been a little flirtatious with, but then like let fall by the wayside a bit and like wasn't giving as much attention because he was wrapped up in something else that wasn't working. And then that character died. And then Jimmy was really messed up about that for like both romantic reasons, heroic reasons, and like I abandoned, you know, my freaks, my people for... You know, just that for everyone else and let them die. Wouldn't that be so much more interesting or dynamic?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be something else?
Fortunately, his heart belongs to Meep.
Yeah, that would be.
If only there was some way we could have a character die that way, perhaps through ingestion of some kind of baked good. Oh, well.
Who could say? Yeah, and like, here's the thing, because he starts like sobbing, and then this leads him into talking more about the issue with Meep, because like Desiree's like, well, I guess now you're trauma dumping and now I'm not the sad one and I have to listen to you be sad. I guess it's your turn. Like, if this was the only time, and I'm being genuine here, if this was the only time Jimmy had brought up Meep and, like, this was, like, the breaking point where he finally was like, ah, oh, there's so much weighing on my shoulders, because he kind of explains, he's like, the reason why Meep died is because I killed a cop in a moment of, like, passion, and then he ended up dying because it should have been me. Like, he shouldn't have had to pay for my thing. If this was the only time Jimmy brought it up and it was, like, a breaking point where, like, the guilt had been eating at him this whole time, fine. That's a fine way to bring it up. If this wasn't the 50th time that Jimmy had been like, Meep was the best of us, like...
Especially because, so much of it hasn't really been expressed as Jimmy's guilt. It's been just like a profound respect for Meep that no one had.
And like,
that no one had. It's not, I'm so guilty Meep died because of my stupid shit, because of my, like, moment of anger.
Right.
No, it's explicitly like, God, Meep was so fucking cool.
I loved Meep so much. Meep was my best friend. He was so brave and kind.
He made such good chili.
You're an angel now, Meep.
And then, now that Jimmy has gotten this, like, horrific guilt about Meep and how cool Meep is off of his chest for the 50th time and is just ugly crying, the next natural step in this interaction is obviously that Jimmy goes in for a kiss on Desiree and whiffs it again. Painful. Just it absolutely.
Actually, yeah. Total cringe. Yeah. I hate to use that word, but it is.
Yeah.
Cringe, but real. Cringe, parentheses, actual.
I think most people, when they talk about, like, rebound relationships, are talking, like, a matter of, like, you know, like a week or two. Not really, like, minute.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> He's like, man, fucked it up with that lady outside. I'm going to try and kiss Del's wife. I think that's good. This lady who listened to me talk for roughly 35 seconds, I should try and kiss her on the mouth, I think.
Extra weird, because Desiree is not a character that Jimmy's interacted with meaningfully before now.
Hey, either. You know, we brought up Kojima, but also technically that means since Del's his father, which Grant, he doesn't know, he's kind of hooking up with, like, a stepmother-y kind of person. Right?
Hell yeah, brother.
Cool.
It's going to get, if you think this is bad and uncomfortable, it's about to get worse. This is, you thought this was the bad thing? You thought this was the weird, uncomfortable stuff that we were talking about? Fuck no. This isn't even scratching the surface. Nope.
So they go for a kiss and it whiffs, but then Desiree's like, yeah, why not? And starts going into it. And then yells, make me feel something. And Jimmy's just like, I know my way. This is, it's tough. And he unsheaths the hand and gets down to the get down of doing the lobster boy finger bang. The dance that pleases the whole town, I guess. And they're like going at it for a sec. And then Desiree's just like, wait, stop. That's not good. Wait, hold on, wait. And they stop. But it's not, like, immediately displayed as, like, a big tragic thing. It's just, and then eventually it really escalates to, like, I need a doctor. And they cut here in a way that's just like, did he explode Desiree's vagina? Like, truly. It's like, did he, like, roll piercing? What happened here?
Like, the first thing I thought is I was like, not to be weird, but, like, the only thing we know about Jimmy really is that he's really good at fingering. So, like,
right.
It would be very odd if there was such a tragic, like, miscommunication and, like, a miscalculation of his own ability that he somehow exploded Desiree's vagina during this interview.
That's the problem. The juggling put him over the top, see? So now he's, like, too powerful.
God damn it.
Finger banging, yeah.
Oh, the weighted gloves came off proverbially in real life, and now he is too strong. He'll never be able to finger bang again. Also, I just want everyone to know, later on, it will become, like, common knowledge who did this, and no one's, like, weird about it. No one's like, you let Lobster Boy finger bang you? Like, no one like brings that up or asks why. They're like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. That's what he does.
It's like a rite of passage in there, probably, at this point, you know?
They're like, oh, okay. But yeah, like, she starts, like, hollering and is like, I need a doctor. And then, like, is, like, screaming in pain. And Ethel, like, runs over and is, like, helping her walk. And you see, like, all this blood.
I'll get help for everybody. Okay, I'll take care of Desiree. You go up there, perform, okay? I'll take care of it.
Like, what are you? Okay.
All right. Whatever. All right, I'm
sorry, I was trying to take this scene seriously, but you fucked it all up. And it's time for another musical number, but it's the same musical number. It's a repeat musical number. You might think, well, there's no way they would just do another of the same. Yeah, they do Life on Mars by David Bowie.
Yeah.
Again.
Not only a song from the future, but The first one they ever did. They make us sit through the same musical number, pretty much identical to the first time it happened. Like, Elsa is dressed the same way and everything. And here's where things are very strange and confusing, is remember, the audience is full of people who are there explicitly to support the freak show because they are grateful to the freak show for saving their town.
I didn't even put what's about to happen there together. You're absolutely right.
Because the thing is, Beef, after this, they'll try and, like, post-shadow it, which is crazy. Some might call it revisionism, of Stanley, like, looking like a little creep while being around this and kind of being like, I told you so, like, to try and imply that he somehow orchestrated this. But no, the people are here explicitly because Jimmy the hero.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way Stanley would have known that Jimmy was going to stop a serial killer and that it would be a full house that would want to be there to, like, support the circus. There's literally no way Stanley would have been able to orchestrate that or know. So there's no reason for us, the audience, to assume that or even, like, even consider that that might be at play. Basically, what happens is she starts doing the musical number the same as she does the first time. And for what it's worth, I will, not to defend, not to be an Elsa Mar stan, she's doing, like, fine. Like, if I was at this show and this was happening, I'd be like, oh, okay, kind of weird to have a musical in the middle of a freak show, but, like, this lady's, like, fine. This is fine.
For me, it would be like, if I wasn't having a great time at the place and this went on for, like, 12 minutes, I would probably just be like, check, please, and then leave and find somewhere else to be. Like, that's about where I would... Like, at worst, I think it's... okay, let's find another spot. It's not really like, fuck you, Elsa Mars, I'll kill you. I'm going to get you with the tomato, you dumb bitch. Like, what are you doing, guys? Like, holy shit. Because, spoilers, they start, like, really escalating quickly. Like, it starts with just a couple of them are kind of like, ignoring her and just talking to each other and eating popcorn and not giving a shit, you know, and then eventually, like, oh, they're kind of laughing at her as they see she's getting nervous, and oh, then she's panicking a little bit and they're throwing things, which, yeah, she's not doing that badly, enough to deserve like chagrin and having things thrown at you. Also, not the correct venue for it. Also, you're here because Jimmy's the hero of the city. So
like, you're extending an olive branch. Like, I've sat through plenty of, like, shit that I didn't want to, like, particularly watch or, like, be a part of, just to be nice, to be courteous to, like, the people putting it on or whatever, like, to be like, no, fuck this.
This is like 100%. Yeah, exactly. That's like another thing. Like, in the scenarios of what you'd really do, it's like, okay, I think my debt to the serial killer guy's paid now. I sat through this crap, you know? Next. But, like,
Never going, like, back there again. Like, no, they're like, I'll fucking kill you, Elsa Mars. I'm going to throw some popcorn at
you. I mean, I was here because you saved my son. I was pretty up on the whole deal, but boo, you stink, lady.
It's like those two Muppets are in the thing. Like, I wish we had the serial killer. We're back.
Oh my god.
So you might think, okay, well, that's clearly just like a delusion Elsa's having of being concerned and Stanley talks to her or whatever, because that doesn't make any sense. No, that's real. That did happen. Is real. That is a thing that's occurring.
Jupiter, Florida, Stanley slunks.
Really
Jupiter is just full of really, like, terrible. Bad times, shit vibes. And Stanley slunks on in to Elsa's tent afterwards, as she is a little bit of a wreck. And Elsa turns to Stanley, who's trying to do a big, like, devil deal pose, like, huh? Oh, also, this episode loves to do framing with mirrors. Sometimes it kind of works. Like, they do one with the twins where, one of the twins is on, like, one of the heads is on a very long, tall rectangular mirror and the other one's on a very short square one. And then they have, like, Elsa walk up behind so that it's like the characters are very visually separated. Right. And it's interesting. They're using the mirrors to, like, keep these characters separate in shot while still having them attached in canon. And then there's another shot where they just have like 17 mirrors all mirroring Elsa's face. I don't think it serves a purpose like on a narrative level. I think they were just like, look at this. Look how many mirrors we got.
I'm with you on that one.
A lot of mirrors, huh?
This is not the first time that they've done this either, because I specifically remember bringing this up, and I think it was Asylum, of being like, they really fucking love doing shots in mirrors for some reason. They just love, I think they did it in both seasons. I think they did it in season 2 and 3, where it's like, goddamn, they love these mirror shots. Like, okay, like, it's better than just like shot her shot, I guess.
And I think they did them in season 1 a couple times, but they were ripping off a movie, because it was the scene with the one girl in the closet with all the mirrors was from Carrie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, I think it started there, and then they were just like, hey, well, now we know how to set up the mirrors. we might as well.
I think what it is, and this is a theory, this is me putting on my tinfoil hat, but I think what it is I think they're like, well, the iconic shot of like main character looking into a mirror with some empty void space over their shoulder to ensure some dread from most horror movies, because that's a pretty classic shot setup in most horror movies, where if you've got a main character looking into a mirror with some empty space behind them, you're already like predisposed to expect something bad to show up behind them, whether it be a ghost or a monster or a killer or whatever. And they were like, all we're taking away from that is that mirrors scary, and we're going to use them as much as we possibly can in every shot we can make happen. So Elsa is surrounded by a bunch of mirrors, and we see Stanley walk up behind her in said framing shot. And she's like, fine, put me on television, Stanley.
I guess. Gotta.
Which, I'll be real, based on the weird like plot we got given by Stanley to Maggie earlier, I'm like, is this really the part you should be focusing on, Stanley? Like
no.
Like, what is this weird B plot you're doing with Elsa? Elsa's not a freak. You can't put her in a jar. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, you want to hear a better resolution to Stanley's plan that would have cut the need for the entire town to, I don't know, huff gas and decide they hate Elsa now out of nowhere? If when she was like, oh, are you from MGM? He goes, yeah. And then we don't have a whole thing of her being like, I don't want to be on TV. Like, she'd just be like, oh, sick. And then we could move on.
No, I'd rather die than be on television.
Like, am I wrong? Cut this whole element?
Dude, that's like such a better lie. Like, he's not good at this, but that's his whole thing, right? He's a con man.
He does it for the love of the game. Stanley does it for the love of the game. He's not in it for efficiency. He's in it for style points.
Well, Slobby, he was going to say he was from a movie company, but she said, are you from MGM? And he didn't hear her because he was thinking of a nude man's ass. And so he was just like, oh, wow.
He was so focused on not letting his gay porn fall out of his briefcase that he was holding that he forgot what he was doing.
God.
Hoisted by my own petard again.
Why do I keep it under my hat?
He's just sweating, like hoping it doesn't fall out like the fucking rat in Ratatouille. Oh my god. Anyway, remember how Desiree like needed to go to the hospital or whatever? It's time to do that. Ethel did not take her to the hospital, which, based on what we saw, definitely seemed like a hospital situation. Like, she was bleeding profusely between the thighs. Not really a, we'll see if my doctor's got any availability situation. It's a, all right, let's get you to the emergency room. But Ethel's like, no, I know one doctor who knows everything about intersex people. Luckily for us, he lives in Jupiter, Florida. And I got you. And it's the guy who diagnosed me with cirrhosis of the liver or whatever. And they go to this doctor who's luckily open in the middle of the night. And I guess he's making up for...
Despite being an old-ass man.
Yeah. Mm. I guess it's to make up for all the time that he couldn't be a doctor at night because of the curfew. He's like, oh, fucking finally. I get to practice at 11 p.m. This is
and
my
Edward
true passion.
And Edward Wardrick's not even going to come for me. This all works yeah. out fine.
This is great for me. I love this. And then Desiree's like, I've never been to a doctor before. And I'm like, okay, fucking bizarre.
What?
Yeah, no, fucking strange, I guess.
Why are we doing that plot thread? Yeah, okay, sure.
Like, fucking like, weird flex.
They have to for what we're about to learn, but it makes no sense. Like, yeah.
I feel like they dropped that on us just so we wouldn't be like...
Yeah, like, how would you not have
yeah,
known
how
what you're about
no
to
one,
learn before?
How has no one brought this up before?
And also, like, okay, not to be, like, weird, but, like, how do your parents, you know, who your family or your friends are like, hey, I don't think having three boobs is normal at the very least. You know what I mean? Like, so... Maybe you should ask someone, but...
And not even just that. Three boobs and apparently, like, lived life as a man. Anyway, we'll get there. So Desiree's like, I'm nervous. I've never been to a doctor before. And, like, Desiree's, like, in her 40s, I would say. Like, early 40s. Maybe late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah.
And, like, the doctor comes in and Ethel starts skittering out of the room. And she's like, oh, you're going to leave? And she's like, oh, well, do you want me to stay? And Desiree's like, yes, please.
Oh, I can stay for you if you want me to.
Yeah. And the doctor is like... All right, so I heard there was, like, some vaginal bleeding. What's going on? Give me some details. And Desiree's like, yeah, doc, sorry. The lobster boy was fingering me. Ethel does not respond.
Lobster boy ripped a critical art in my pussy. He's just yeah. like, yeah, okay.
And you might yeah, all right. mm-hmm. you may think Liz is doing a bit right now. Liz is not doing a bit right
no,
now. That
no,
is
Liz is not what, doing a bit right now. Yeah.
That is what she says to the doctor. as if the doctor's like, oh, okay, I'm not going to ask who Lobster Boy is or what the fuck that yeah. means.
No explanation needed. Yeah.
yeah. He's like, oh, that's
the best of us.
Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That, of course. Silly me. Why wouldn't I assume that's what happened? Is that Lobster Boy, obviously Lobster Boy was fingering you.
Duh.
It happens.
Honestly,
actually,
it was stupid for me not to have assumed it.
You know what? To be entirely candid, with as much fingering as Jimmy is doing in Jupiter, Florida, maybe this isn't the first time someone's come in and been like, yeah,
ooh, yeah.
Lobster Boy was fingering yeah. me. Then it all went wrong.
Not again.
He's like, I really gotta find out more about this Lobster Boy and put an end to it. He seems like a real menace.
If only
gotta get him to cut his nails.
Yeah.
He's lucky he found that serial killer, I swear.
And Ethel, who is Lobster Boy's mother, does not react at all to Desiree being like, I was getting finger yeah. blasted by Lobster Boy, and she won't for the rest of the show.
Which, by the way, Ethel, who is aware that she is Jimmy's mother, and Del, who is currently with Desiree, is Jimmy's father. And she just is like, hey, mm-hmm.
anyway.
Worked for that one guy or whatever, Oedipus. Who gives a shit?
She's like, I'm not here to judge. Yeah, I'm not here to judge. Who gives a fuck? Oh my god. And then the doctor's like, all right, let me get in there. And then he starts doing an exam, and I'm like, I feel like there's other steps that happen if there's like there's you need to make sure she's not bleeding anymore. Anyway, he just gets in there with
he gets a scapular in there and is just like, spread them.
Yeah.
I'm doing it.
And I'm like, damn, all right, like, seems like there's a few other steps you should take, but whatever. And she's like, holy shit, this has never happened to me before. I've never been to the doctor. And then he's like, hey, where were you born? I'm assuming the doctor was just asking this to, like, take her mind off of what was happening.
Yeah, also, I will say, I don't like the way the doctor, like, brandishes the speculum. It's not, like, a good move to do.
Oh, you mean, like, spinning it around your finger like it's a gun and you're a cowboy? You don't like that move?
Well, I more meant just being like, when someone is already in distress, holding up the big metal object you're about to shove into them over your head and be like, get ready, samurai.
Eyes Up Samurai, the cyberpunk sting plays. But yeah, he like, I guess to like calm her down, like just asks her like, oh yeah, where were you born? Like, tell me a little bit. And that's common. And she's like, I was born in Philadelphia. And she gives this, they could have just not had this bit because it doesn't make any fucking sense. She's like, I was born, and when I came out of my mom, the doctor slapped me on the ass and told her, you have a beautiful baby son. And I lived as a boy named Derek until I was 12, and I grew 3 breasts, which is going to be fucking insane, given the literal next thing the doctor says, which is the doctor's yeah. like, yeah, no, you have like fully female genitals, like entirely. You're 100% mm-hmm. biologically female.
And she's like, well, what about the thing that everyone says is a penis? He's like, huge clit. That's it. It's like, huge clit. And she's just like, oh.
And like, I'm like, there are other parts to like the penis that like I think a doctor would have seen when she was
huge
born.
Huge clit.
Oh, that clit. Oh, stupid. I can't even tell you. I didn't want to tell you what I was thinking.
Oh my god. Like, you would, yeah, you would think the doctor that delivered her would be like, no balls, huh? Okay. This is a boy. No balls and a vagina. Boy, you have a son. And then her mother was like, yeah, it makes sense. I've seen a penis or two in my lifetime. That's what they look like. Yeah.
Have you though?
And the doctor's like, yeah, your body produced like a little more testosterone than usual, but you were actually pregnant and you miscarried a baby. You have like fully functional uterus and ovaries. Yeah,
they claim it was like they were producing too much testosterone for a while, so their body overproduced estrogen, and that's why they got the tertiary breast, which I don't know enough about hormone mechanics to confirm or deny that, but that it doesn't sound right.
Right.
The doctor is super confident about it, though. He just hip fires all this info. He's like, yeah, you're biologically female. You just have a really big clitoris. If you want, I can do that, like, cosmetic surgery to make it appear smaller. If you'd like, it's no big deal. I do it all the time. And I'm like, fucking okay, whatever. Whatever, man. Sure. Okay. Anyway, and then he's like, yeah, you had a miscarriage. They don't, in case you're wondering, they don't ever fucking bring that up again. They don't ever bring up that she miscarried a baby. And he says that it's because the baby wasn't viable, which means one of two things. Either Jimmy finger blasted her so hard it killed the baby, which is an insane thing to imply.
It is pretty funny, I have to be honest with you.
Yeah. Either Jimmy finger blasted her with his lobster hands so goddamn hard that it obliterated the fetus in her uterus.
Punched a hole in it. Damn.
I don't laugh at a lot of kid death stuff, but that's hilarious. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Or the more likely thing that they want us to believe, which is also pretty fucking funny, is that like this was so tragically coincidentally timed that it just so happened when Jimmy was finger blasting her, like just the worst timing time.
What I think they were trying to imply, which is maybe more crazy, you tell me, is that Jimmy, okay, so you didn't puncture her, she miscarried, and I'm using this to explain that she's 100% biologically female, great, but Jimmy, you're not allowed to be sad that you made her miscarry, because the baby wasn't gonna work at all. It wasn't even a real person, basically. You, Jimmy, you can't be mad about that. I literally think they're trying to say, like, oh, the baby never would have worked. There was a miscarriage, yeah, but don't feel bad about it, because it wasn't, it was never, it was pre, you just did it faster.
Right, yeah.
Like,
he can't be,
I think
Jimmy
that's
can't
what they're
be
trying
sad
to
about
say
two
is,
things. He can't have you sad about Meep and the baby.
Yeah, like I legit think they're being like, yeah, no, yeah, the police said not to worry about the baby. It was like a totally garbage baby. it was gonna be trash. Don't even worry about it.
And also, like, this is like a big like turning point where she's like, holy shit, I can have a baby. And I'm like, you're like 40 something, and that this has never come up. Like, I doubt you were using protection of any kind because you thought you had male genitalia and could not reproduce. So, like, it just never came up before now. It just, like, never was, okay, all right. And that completely to the side, I guess she's had a miscarriage. Nobody will bring that up because even when she addresses
including her.
Yeah, including her.
She doesn't care. Yeah. Like, she's like hyped. She's like, I had a miscarriage. That means I can have a kid. This is great news. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like, there's like shit that happens during like a miscarriage. Like, not to get too graphic, there's like a lot of things that happen that aren't good and like really bad mentally and like hormonally and stuff. Like, it is a bad experience for whoever is going through it, like on a lot of levels that like we can measure. They're very real and objective. It's not just like having a bad day. So like the idea that she's just like, oh, sick, hype, miscarriage. Like, no, you can't.
And it gets even weirder when she has to tell Del about it later. We won't get there today because we're not even halfway done with this episode. When I tell you that the rest of this episode is full of so much fucking stuff that there's no way we could possibly
worse
fit it.
Worse stuff.
You think this is bad? We're not even
this
to the bad stuff yet. We're not even
this
to,
is good.
You know how we preface this?
I'm not making
this
a joke.
Yeah, we preface this with being like, this is the worst episode of the television show. We gave it a whole speech. We're not even to that.
I mean, this part
yet.
Doesn't help.
No, it's not good.
The part, though, you might remember that everyone was like, yeah, you can't forget this episode because it's called Pink Cupcakes. You might notice we haven't said shit about a pink cupcake yet.
Nope.
That's crazy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that's so crazy. Yeah, so that's going to be it for part one. This is almost certainly going to be a three-parter, but hey, you know, maybe not, but maybe it deserves it. I personally feel like
it
absolutely
does.
I'll just let you know, next time we're going to windmill slam into just burying Dora in the yard, and the implications of that, which are wild and far-reaching. So look forward to, I guess, anything y'all want to drop before we close out and get ready for part two.
I don't
want to think about it.
Okay, great. Yeah, look forward to next time where we run into what is possibly the worst segment of any dramatic television I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's bad.
Next time, baby. Later.